You're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, here in the liberal land of long beards, lattes, and lutefisk. And now here are your hosts, Brett Johnson and Eric Nelson.
The Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett and Eric, and we finally got an intro recorded with both your name and my name on it.
Yeah, a little bit of magic.
Yeah, a little bit of audio editing magic. No, our announcer guy didn't come in here, but I figured we got to get that put together like after 6 months of we either have one of our names not included on there, depending on whichever one we play. So we finally got that straightened out due to the magic of audio editing. Glad to have you with us here on this Thursday afternoon, a Thursday before Memorial Day. Quick programming note here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Tomorrow, we are going to be getting an early start on our Memorial Day weekend, as we will have a great best of show lined up for you. We'll be playing back interviews that have to do with what happened during the legislature over the past few months. We'll be playing back an interview I had with State Senator Steve Swazinski, kind of giving you an insider look at how the Capitol works, being that he's a former government teacher, actually my government teacher back in high school, as we kind of learned the ins and outs of how things work at the state legislature. Then we'll play back a couple interviews Hunter Haas did, one with State Senator Scott Jensen, a Republican who represents the Chaska area, and then also an interview with Tim Schaefer talking about right to repair. So that's on the way tomorrow as we're all getting an early start on our Memorial Day weekend. But Matt McNeil will be here with a live show, though, so you do have that going for you. Lots ahead on the program today as we're going to be talking about what's happening at the state legislature, as there's some provisions that did not make this final budget bill and it looks like they are not going to be getting passed during the special session either. We're going to talk about that. Then also, you might have seen this crawling around your Facebook feed, the story about this apparent Somali attack against Minnesotans at light rail stations. Hint, it's a completely false story. We're going to talk about that later on in the program, as well as some miscellaneous national stories. But first, I am happy to welcome in Cameron Easley, who is the Washington editor for the Morning Consult, as the Morning Consult has been doing lots of polling in terms of impeachment, the 2020 Democratic primary. And I figured it was time we take a dive into these numbers because there's some interesting trends and figures that we need to bring up here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Cameron, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Brett.
Yeah, glad to have you with us, as there's some interesting numbers we've seen over the past few weeks and months that have to do with what's happening over in Washington. And I want to start off with the numbers on impeachment, because looking at the polling you guys have done over there at Morning Consult, I've been surprised on how the numbers have been trending over the past few months, because I thought a lot of people kind of fell into the camp that I did. And this is purely me speaking on my partisan behalf, not yours, Cameron. I know you're nonpartisan, but for me, speaking as someone who is left-leaning, I was originally in January, when it comes to impeachment, I was thinking, oh, maybe we should hold off. But I've slowly kind of gravitated towards, no, I think we really do need to impeach Donald Trump. And I expected the polls to kind of trend that way as well, but apparently that's not been the case, as we've had lots of peaks and valleys where support for impeachment started in the upper 30s back in January. It built up into the low 50s, maybe around February or March. Then it dropped back down to around 40% in April. Now it started to trend back up. Have you been surprised by this at all, Cameron, in terms of the numbers we've been seeing on the possible impeachment of President Trump?
I actually think that it makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of Democratic voters had the same feeling that you did at the very beginning of the Congress, that was the lowest that we've measured so far. But it seemed like pretty early on, as the longest partial government shutdown in U.S. history kept on rolling. I think that had quite an impact in driving Democrats' views up and making them more likely to prioritize beginning proceedings to remove the president from office. I think the fever broke a little bit on that in late February as they finally got that situation resolved. And I think in the weeks after that, you may recall that was when Nancy Pelosi kind of went public with her media tour, saying things like, the president is not worth it. That's not something that we should be doing. And I think oftentimes, and you see a relationship between the base and the principal leading that party, where you will see voters on the ground reacting and taking cues from that kind of messaging. That we after those comments from Pelosi and around that time, we saw urgency for impeachment falling among Democratic voters. But really, it really started to tick back up again in early April. Obviously, this was whenever Attorney General William Barr first came out with, you know, his main takeaways from Special Counsel Robert Mueller completing his report on Russian interference in the 2016 election. You know, there was obviously that was a highly covered event throughout the news. We saw opinion pick up moving toward impeachment on Democratic voters throughout that month. And really, it's kind of stayed up there since then. I mean, it's been a bigger problem for Pelosi to tamp down on that talk, as you know, more evidence of potential occurrences of obstruction of justice by President Trump throughout the course of the investigation have come to light. And I mean, I think it's about as hot as it's been right now. And you've seen her taking a lot of steps over the past few days. Kind of trying to refocus her message and to present a unified like a view of a unified front to the president. You know, speaking specifically of this messaging this morning, where she said that you know the president wants us to impeach him. So let's not do exactly what he wants.
Do you think a lot of her strategy just has to do with looking at the overall poll numbers? Because as we talked about, the numbers for Democrats themselves in terms of favoring impeachment has kind of reached a high where it's 52%. But the overall population, where you include everybody, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, just 28% of all voters favor impeachment, while 41% are against. Do you think she's taking this into account when it comes to her strategizing and messaging on impeachment?
She's certainly taking that into account. You know, I talked to some Democrats, both on the campaign side and on the congressional side back in December before the new Congress started, just kind of asking them about impeachment. And the general view that I got was, you know, Democrats view Trump as a weak president. They see his approval numbers, which are pretty historically bad in many cases. They think that status quo puts them in a really good position to defeat him in 2 November. And, you know, they think any kind of drastic move like this could potentially complicate that narrative. So it's certainly a big factor for Pelosi, and I think it's a big factor for a lot of Democrats.
So moving on, let's take a closer look at some of the data in terms of Democratic primary polling here for 2020. And Joe Biden has taken a pretty big, ascent in the polls, which I think even surprised a lot of his campaign workers, where before he entered the race, he was generally hovering around kind of that 30 to 35%. But since he's entered the race, he's seen quite a bump where he's up near 40, and I've even seen a few polls with him near 45%. What do you think is causing this real ascent in his campaign or his polling numbers? Is it like a nostalgia for the Barack Obama presidency, or is it electability, or does it come down to just name recognition?
So I think the first two things you mentioned there, nostalgia for the Obama administration and era, and a focus on electability, are probably the two biggest things that Joe Biden is benefiting from right now. A lot of Democrat, I mean, Barack Obama is still far and away the most popular Democrat in the party. I think people really like to, I mean, just like you said, nostalgia. That's something that the Democratic voters would like to get back to. And the other big issue as it relates to electability is, you know, I think a lot of the Democratic candidates right now are suffering from Hillary Clinton's loss in 2016. I think there are big concerns about making sure that whoever the party picks is the candidate that has the best chance of beating President Trump in 2020. And I think, you know, the former vice president has a fair amount of data to point to that supports that claim, while head-to-head polling for the general election isn't necessarily very predictive at this point. You can see that in comparison to the other candidates, he is consistently outperforming them against President Trump in those hypothetical polls. So I think primaries are supposed to be about ideas and contrast and revving up energy, it really does seem like Democratic voters right now are already thinking very, very strategically.
Well, another reason I brought up in terms of the possible ascent for Joe Biden, who's now running for president, is I don't know if name recognition is necessarily the best way to put it, but maybe just familiarity with them. When you conduct polls and you name all the candidates and you ask someone who they're going to vote for, they think, well, Joe Biden, he was the vice president under Obama. I liked him. And then when you name some of the other candidates, people may have heard of them in the news, but they don't know a lot about them. Do you think familiarity has a lot to do with it, too, with Joe Biden?
It certainly has something. It certainly has something to do with it, but I don't think it's not just name ID, right? I mean, let's look at Bernie Sanders. He has pretty much similar level of name ID as Joe Biden among likely Democratic primary voters that we've been tracking, and he has similar favorability as Joe Biden as well. But if you look at the numbers, Biden has a significant lead over Sanders. So I think that just further underscores that, you know, the reason that people are picking Joe Biden over Bernie Sanders is not necessarily because they dislike Bernie Sanders. They just think Joe Biden at this point has a better chance of beating Trump.
What's interesting is you bring up with Bernie Sanders, as you said, he's not doing nearly as well as he did in 2016 when towards the end of the campaign he was generally polling around 40%. Now most polls, including yours, has had him anywhere from about 15 to 25%, kind of depending on the time. So what I found interesting as well, and this wasn't your poll, but it was Emerson who conducted one a few weeks ago where it said 26% of current Bernie Sanders supporters said that they would rather vote for President Donald Trump over someone like Elizabeth Warren, or actually Elizabeth Warren herself, which I find really interesting because you would think a Bernie Sanders and an Elizabeth Warren would be competing for the same voters, but that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case. Is this something where Bernie Sanders has a core of supporters and they're going to vote for him no matter what, and they're really not enthused about any of the other Democrats? Because maybe the polling shows that as well, where when you look at his 15 to 25%, which is low, or about half as much as he had in 16, where some of his supporters that he had in 16 are also looking at other candidates, while meanwhile you have these diehards that aren't open to any of the other candidates.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly something to that. You know, we poll second choice as well on a weekly basis. And, you know, our own polling shows that 37% of Bernie Sanders supporters say Joe Biden is their second choice. That's about twice as many as who said the same for Elizabeth Warren. And I think, you know, one of the things that we'll be debating throughout this campaign, the question we'll try to answer, is how much of 2016, the entire process, was about Hillary Clinton and how much of it was about other factors. You know, Sanders was able to overperform in a lot of people's eyes in 2016. And so the question there becomes, was that just a protest vote
right
to Hillary Clinton? And then the other thing is, you know, maybe Bernie Sanders' support, while part of it is certainly based on an affinity with his ideology, maybe it's not that big of a part at all. I think it's pretty interesting that if you look at Elizabeth Warren's second choice numbers, her supporters are most likely to say that they back Bernie Sanders instead. And while it's pretty close there, 23% of Warren supporters say they pick Sanders as their second choice versus 20% for Biden and 20% for Kamala Harris. That implies to me that maybe Warren supporters are more likely to make a vote choice based on that ideological affinity than Sanders supporters are. So I think it's possible that you know, for now, it doesn't look like Warren stands to pick up that much from him. But I do think there's potentially a lane down the way for that to happen.
Yeah,
I think there's an opportunity. You know, if Joe Biden starts to falter once we get into the debates or a little bit later than that, I'm not sure that it's Bernie Sanders who necessarily stands the most to gain there. I think there could be another candidate that comes in and comes through and just ends up taking straight from Biden. In that situation, if that candidate is Elizabeth Warren, I think you can see an argument that she is able to pull some of that Bernie Sanders support. I mean, you might remember back in 2016, a lot of the enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders, those people before that were very excited about Warren before she decided to jump in.
Yeah, it's just interesting to look at those numbers, and I was just so shocked to see Joe Biden as the second choice for a number of these Bernie Sanders supporters. It's interesting to try to look and see who these people are, because ideologically, yeah, you don't think they would be similar at all. Moving on to another –
you know,
go ahead, yes.
Sorry, I'd make one more point of that. One other thing that we found with Bernie Sanders supporters, they're less likely to be politically engaged.
Okay.
Which also tells me that he may be benefiting more from name ID at this point, and would also explain why Joe Biden is the most likely to benefit from a potential exit from the race, which I think we have to say is unlikely.
So I want to focus on two candidates who, in terms of polling, have kind of moved in opposite directions, and that's Beto O'Rourke and Pete Buttigieg. And I don't know how to necessarily classify them other than kind of calling them the rock star candidates, where it's more about their personality, who kind of came out of nowhere, that people are appreciating and liking their message, even though they're not real policy specific. Do you think Pete Buttigieg has kind of stolen some of the vote from Beto O'Rourke in terms of the polling? Do you think they share some of the same voters, and a lot of those former Beto supporters have now moved on to Mayor Pete?
I think we do have some evidence for that. I also think a lot of this is about profile. And, you know, we were talking about name ID earlier, and the truth about the early stage of this primary process is that it's just been very, very difficult for a lot of candidates to break through. Pete Buttigieg is really the only one of the lesser-known candidates who has picked up big movement in terms of his name ID, and some of that has been correlated with people saying, yeah, I'd like to see this guy. I think Buttigieg has had a really smart media strategy so far. Beto O'Rourke has spent a lot of time knocking on doors and speaking to people in these early primary states. But in a lot of cases, he's eschewed the media spotlight a little bit, whereas we've really been seeing a lot of Buttigieg out there for the past couple months. And I think that's been a big difference so far.
We're speaking with Cameron Easley. He's the Washington editor for the Morning Consult. Got two more questions for you, Cameron. I know over there in the studio, Eric, we're running just a little bit late here, but I think it's been a good conversation. And I want to ask you this, because we have the debates coming up in June. I believe they're only a few weeks away. Do you expect any surges after these debates, or do you think the numbers are going to stay pretty stable with all of these candidates?
I mean, I think it depends on what actually happens. It's a huge opportunity for all of these other candidates. You would expect Joe Biden to be the main point of focus. I'm sure there will be a lot of discussion of his record. I'm sure there will be a lot of discussion of, you know, the kind of style that he's put out so far this year. He's been leaning much more into the kind of Obama message of unity and hope, whereas we've seen some of these other candidates in various ways talk more about, you know, fighting back and kind of having to up the ante in an effort to get the country in a different direction. And I think we'll see, like, those will be some of the really key contrasts that'll be on the stage, depending on how well someone executes their case, then absolutely we could see some impact in the polls.
All right, Cameron, one final question for you, and I got to ask this, being that we are located here in Minnesota. Any hope of a comeback for Amy Klobuchar, or has that kind of moderate lane of the party been overtaken by other candidates like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris?
I think that makes things a little bit more complicated for her. I mean, I think Biden's entry into the race made things a little more complicated for a lot of the candidates. But it's still very, very early in the process. She does, you know, Minnesota is right next to Iowa. And we're still a long way away from that. If she could end up putting together, a run there that exceeds expectations, then, you know, maybe she could get back in the picture, but she's certainly on the outside looking in as things stand.
That's Cameron Easley. He is the Washington editor for the Morning Consult. Cameron, thanks so much for taking some time to join us today. Great information. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Brett.
And you are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, 952-946-6205. I want to go back to one of those stats we were just talking about with Cameron, and that is Bernie supporters who have Joe Biden as their second choice. If you're in that camp, I want to hear from you, because those two things don't really seem to jive with me. And maybe if you are one of those people who is a Bernie supporter but has Biden as your second choice, love to hear some feedback on why that is. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Have some other pieces of local news on the way as well. Next, as you're listening to Brett and Eric on the Repartee.
Hi, this is Matt McNeil, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repip-Dip-Dip-Do, right here on AM 950.
At Better Futures Minnesota, our purpose is to fuel and guide our men's desire to turn their lives around and walk a new path toward better health and success. We are intent on changing the costly systems and practices that produce poor results and perpetuate the chaos and cycles of dependency experienced by men who have faced incarceration. We are building a movement that supports personal transformation and a healthy, vibrant community of men. Visit us at BetterFuturesMinnesota.com to learn how you can support our movement.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at the Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at the Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Atheists Talk is the radio show for free-thinking Minnesotans. Listen on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock. Every Sunday, we bring you science, philosophy, politics, and plain old fun from an atheist point of view. Visit our website at MinnesotaAtheists.org for more details. Tune in to Atheists Talk Radio Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's good radio without the good book.
Here's six great reasons to join Sika Salmon Shares. Truly wild, hook and line caught Alaskan fish the way it was meant to be. Community focused, producer owned by our Alaskan fishing families. Exceptional quality, sashimi grade artisan caught fish. Sustainable and traceable, back to the exact boat and fisherman who caught it. Convenient and affordable, delivered directly to your home with delicious recipes and a variety of membership levels, all 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Learn more at SITKASalmonShares.com and use code AM950 when you join.
Have you tuned in to Mission Accomplishers yet? Saturdays at 7 p.m., hosted by the fellas Hunter Hawes and Eric Nelson. You don't want to miss out, so subscribe on your podcast app of choice, Apple, Google, Stitcher. We release extended editions of the show, talks, interviews that you can only find via podcast. Pull up Apple Podcasts now, type in Mission Accomplishers, subscribe, rate us, and give feedback, and we'll read your feedback on the air. Mission Accomplishers, Saturdays at 7 p.m. on AM 950.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
This is Jennifer Ogren, account executive at AM 950, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee?
It is the Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett and Eric. We were getting into a conversation over the commercial break about some of these numbers we were looking at in the polls. And, yeah, they just don't make a whole lot of sense because even if you're one of those people that says, oh, well, polls are wrong, they're always false. When you look at the second choice for a lot of these Bernie Sanders supporters, it's overwhelmingly Joe Biden. The numbers I have show 26% for Biden, 16% for Elizabeth Warren, and I think Cameron, who we were speaking to just a few minutes ago, has said recently that gap has even widened. So it's something I'm just not picking up on, and I'd love to hear from you if you have some thoughts on that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Eric, you were also asking me about that poll that said 26% of Bernie supporters said they would rather vote for Trump in 2020 over Elizabeth Warren if she's the nominee, and you thought that seemed kind of high as well, didn't you?
It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm assuming that this poll was just conducted with people who had very low information.
Yeah, they did get some criticism on that it was maybe a small sample size. But in theory, it might kind of make some sense when you look back at 2016 polling. I think overall it was between 8 and 10% of Bernie supporters ended up either going for Trump or not voting at all. So if you were to double that roughly to 26%, it would kind of line up with his polling data where his support's kind of been cut in half over just down to the real diehard supporters now that might only be going for him as a personality rather than policy itself. But
yeah, I can see the field of progressives in the last election was much smaller,
mm-hmm.
where now people might be separating out. But besides, I can't believe that that's the accurate number.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let's go to a call in Mark. He is from Stillwater, wants to talk about Bernie as a second choice. Hey there, Mark, what's on your mind?
No, you got Mark from Fridley.
Oh, Mark from Fridley, I got you. All right. Thought you moved on me there, Mark.
Yeah, well, listen, I think that what everybody should do is check out the Rolling Stone for the Matt Taibbi article about Bernie Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard being attacked by the – and Matt Taibbi is a very credible investigative journalist.
Yeah, I've seen that there were some real hit pieces on those two over the past couple of days or weeks.
Right. And so this guy that – my first question would have been to this guy. In 2016, how come your entire industry got it absolutely, incorrigibly wrong? Because there was – Donald Trump – didn't think he was going to win the election.
No,
to the point where he said he didn't even prepare a speech. So if all of the polling in 2016, 99% said that this was going to be a landslide victory, how did they all get it wrong? And then with this guy, so what he's trying to say is that Bernie Sanders' politically unengaged voters would vote for Biden. I don't know anybody that supports Bernie is politically unengaged.
See,
it's just the opposite.
See, I'm with you there, Mark, but it's not just this poll from Morning Consult. I've seen others showing these similar numbers as well, and they're not just going with Biden as their second choice by a little. It's overwhelming. So even if you have a significant polling error, it would still be Biden coming out well ahead as that second choice. I'm just not sure how that
–
you don't believe it? Okay.
But ask yourself, please, do you know anybody that supports Bernie Sanders that would vote for Joe Biden?
Personally, I do not know.
Okay, how about Eric?
I don't know anyone who would even come close to that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's three of us, and we disagree with the person that you just had on. Ask everybody else that follows me up or put a post.
We'll see. That's why I'm asking it on the air right here. Yeah, if there's anyone who is
in
that camp.
So that guy was wrong, and I don't think anybody I don't think any Bernie Sanders supporters are politically engaged, and that's why they're Bernie Sanders voters. Joe Biden voters are politically unengaged, and that's why they're Joe Biden voters.
Hey, Mark, got to leave it there because we're running late on the break. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll continue with phone calls next on the Repartee with Eric and Brett.
Yeah, this is Karen Olson Johnson from Connections Radio, and you are listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces is having their annual service special. Every stove, insert, and fireplace needs maintenance. Get it done now and save $40. You'll be ready to fire up before the cold weather hits again. From 94, take the Riverside Avenue exit and go east to 2901 Franklin Avenue. See the Twin Cities' most diverse selection of clean-burning, reliable, and environmentally smart stoves and fireplaces.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, owner of Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. Have you ever watched your dog or cat curl up in front of a fire like a Norman Rockwell painting brought to life? It's primordial the way fire touches both the animal and the human. We have the equipment and the know-how to supply, install, and maintain stoves and fireplaces. Call us at 612-338-6606 and take advantage of our spring cleaning and maintenance special. We are online at woodlandstoves.com. The mission and the passion of Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces is to make the fire work for you.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to 1 for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
No one beats Warner Stellion. No one. Our passion is earning your business, and we've guaranteed appliance savings for nearly 70 years. But the Warners know there's more to it than just offering the lowest price. So we've hired and we've trained the very best people to make every step of your appliance buying experience simple and fun. Now through June 3rd, Warner Stellion will save you even more with exclusive in-store specials. Go to WarnerStellion.com or come on in for full details. Choose Minnesota's own Warner Stellion.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Tonight, showers with thunderstorms happening after midnight. Temperatures in the low 50s. Tomorrow will be rainy with highs in the lower 70s and lows in the mid 50s. Saturday, sunny with the highs in the mid 70s and lows in the lower 50s. This Saturday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Better Futures Minnesota will be hosting their Memorial Day weekend Customer Appreciation Day. Everything in their warehouse will be on sale, in addition to door prize giveaways at 11, 12, 1, and 2. So swing by this Saturday at 2620 Minnehaha Avenue in Minneapolis.
This is Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutchinson, and you're listening to Doug, Brent Hunter, and Eric on Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
And indeed, you are listening to the Repartee. Thank you, Sheriff Dave Hutch, for recording that bumper. If you'd like to ever record a bumper for us, call 952-946-6205. After hours, leave us a voicemail, and we'll work on getting that in our rotation. So we had another caller during the break call up and say he's a Bernie supporter, and there's no way he'd go for Joe Biden. And I guess going back to Mark's little unofficial survey there, that would make four people who don't know any Bernie supporters who would go with Biden as their second choice. I was trying to hypothesize in terms of who some of these people might be that would make Biden a second choice after Bernie Sanders. The only thing I can think of is that Bernie in his polling numbers is down towards 15 to 20%. So you are down to the real core Bernie supporters, not some of those 2016 supporters that ended up liking him more than Hillary Clinton because they thought he was a more liberal version of a Democrat compared to Hillary. So maybe we're just down to the diehards who
diehards would still probably someone else besides Biden.
See, that's why I was just thinking myself, well, that still doesn't make any sense in my head. Yeah,
I'm thinking it's just people who are very unengaged.
Yeah.
Didn't like Hillary Clinton, so they're like, oh, Bernie's my guy.
Because I would think, that's where I was stopping myself, because I would think, well, no, those would be the soft supporters who would probably have drifted to another candidate by now. So
I think it's people who just don't care about politics, but kind of know.
It might be that, yeah, that they really don't like Donald Trump. They don't pay attention to politics. Or maybe there's someone that watched that Fox News town hall that leans a little bit to the right and then gave Bernie Sanders a standing ovation. Maybe it's people
maybe
like
that's
that.
Like the 0.5% of America.
Yeah, either way, it'd be interesting to dive into that question. Maybe we can have Cameron or someone from the Morning Consult on another program to dive deeper into that, because it is a piece of data that just doesn't make any sense to me. Also wanted to address something to what Mark was saying as well in terms of the polls not making any sense or being wrong in 2016. I think you're partially correct in that statement, because I think if you aggregate the polls, you get a much better idea. Eric and I were talking during the break about 538 and Nate Silver in 2016. Now, Nate Silver projected that Hillary Clinton was going to win, but he only gave her a 70% chance to win. He said Trump still had a path to victory at 30%. And of course, Nate got a ton of criticism from different people on the left saying, no way, Hillary's got a 95% chance of winning. So some of the polls are right in terms if you weight those correctly, and that's what he ended up doing in terms of finding that small path for Trump. And my point is that even if the polls are off in terms of these second choice voters – or these second choices for a Bernie supporter, they wouldn't be off that much where it would be within a few percentage points. Right now, again, the second choice for Bernie supporters overwhelmingly is Joe Biden, at least according to a lot of the polls. Hey, we got Randy in St. Cloud, and he also is with Mark. Oh, looks like we don't quite have Randy there. Hey, Randy, give us a call back at 952-946-6205. Randy from St. Cloud, although Randy from Coon Rapids is also welcome to call in.
Looks like we lost him, but I think I can summarize his point.
Yeah.
Which is that it is complete expletive, that poll.
Interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm a little bit more of a believer in the polls if you aggregate them and weight them correctly, but I'm kind of a 538 nerd in that sense.
But do you remember how the public reacted to Nate Silver predicting
Donald Trump? Yeah, it was a meltdown. Yeah,
when he had like a 30% win chance.
Yeah, it was around
a week out from the election, and people were like ridiculing him, saying he was working for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Is this another case like that where someone just doesn't want to stand out? Or
maybe it is that. And yeah, just to his credit, I thought he nailed it as well, because Trump went through the narrowest of paths possible to actually win the presidency. I mean, well, as it's been brought up many times, he won by just a few thousand votes in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. At least so we think. I won't even get into the election fraud conversation. That can be saved for another show. But yeah, some interesting thoughts here on the presidential election. Well, let's go ahead and switch to some local news, since we are, of course, the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. And kind of some depressing news coming out of the state legislature in some things that are not going to be brought up during the special session. You heard Matt cover this extensively on his show, and in case you missed it, unfortunately, the Alex Smith Emergency Insulin Act looks like it will not be in the special session. If you're not familiar with the Emergency Insulin Act, which is named in honor, I should say, of Alex Smith, who died of not being able to get insulin a few years ago. Basically, the story was back in 2017, Smith, who was 26 years old from Minneapolis, he had diabetes and he was forced off his mother's health insurance after his birthday, because obviously now you can stay on your parents' insurance until you are 25 years old. But once you're 26, you're unfortunately kind of on your own. So as soon as he turned 26 years old, he can no longer afford his insulin medication, which cost $1,300, which is just an insane amount of money.
Yeah, a month, right?
That's
more than a lot of people's rent. So
I couldn't do that. That's more than I pay on housing. Yeah, no way I could afford that. So there was a bill going through the state legislature that had bipartisan support. I think it was 65-0, according to the press release, at least on the initial vote in the state Senate, in terms of setting up this emergency fund for people who are low income and can't afford their insulin. It would be funded through a tax on insulin providers. So if you were a poor person and you couldn't afford your insulin, you could at least get emergency medication. Well, unfortunately, it has kind of died, and it's not going to go anywhere in the state Senate, because as Matt brought up during his show, it wasn't put in a spreadsheet in terms of bills that needed to get passed, which is just seems like a cop-out kind of to the pharmaceutical industry, an excuse for Republicans to say they don't want to vote for it. They can say, well, we supported this bill, but the DFL, well, they didn't put it in their spreadsheet in terms of bills that they wanted to see passed. So completely ridiculous to me. $1,300 a month is an absurd cost for health care, let alone a medication like insulin, which you essentially need to live if you have diabetes or something significant like that.
Especially when you find out that the exact same product in Canada and Mexico is being sold for like $160 a month.
I thought in Australia you could find it for like $8 as well.
I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. So that's unfortunately not going anywhere in the state legislature, and it's going to cause people a lot of harm and maybe even death. I don't know where you go from there.
Bare minimum of government function.
Yeah, it's not like we're setting up a Medicare for all system or a single payer, just an emergency fund.
If you can't
nothing more than that,
dying in completely preventable ways, then what are we doing?
Well, I guess score another one for the lobbyists. talking about scoring another one, well, for the not right side of history, Lake Bede-Mikaska, well, now reverting back to the name Lake Calhoun. Unfortunately, the DFL lawmakers have given up on trying to change that name. They, of course, put through some legislation to try to officially make Calhoun Bede-Mikaska, but ended up, well, you guessed it, failing in the Senate, since apparently the court ruling that said that Bede-Mikaska had to go back to Calhoun, said that renaming lakes could only be done by the legislature. So members of the DFL House tried to do something with that, but didn't go through, died in the state Senate. So I guess try again after the 2020 election cycle or hope for a better court ruling. And one more piece of legislation that will not be part of law, and this is another bipartisan thing that for some reason it will not get passed during the special session. I have no idea why. It's basically a Time's Up bill, which has to do with preventing sexual harassment in schools. It would be a basically this committee that would be set up by the legislature that would advocate for funding for the Minnesota Department of Education to hire a statewide Title IX coordinator. So there would be funding put aside for a Title IX coordinator who would help with sexual harassment in schools. This initially had bipartisan support, and you guessed it, it is going nowhere in the special session. So that's what happens when you don't vote like in 2016, because that's how we ended up with a Republican Senate prior to 2016. We actually had a DFL-controlled Senate. Again, a reason why you got to vote in more than just presidential elections. Going to take another time out here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, and on the way we'll be talking about this thing you may have been seeing float around Facebook in terms of Somali immigrants attacking Minnesotans at a light rail station in Minneapolis. Completely false, but you probably have a lot of your conservative friends that have been sharing this on Facebook. We're going to address this and why it's completely false next on Minnesota's Progressive Repartee with Brett and Eric.
This is Reverend Jack from Minneapolis, and you are listening to the Repartee here on AM 950. Hey, you guys are awesome. I love you. Repartee, yo. Peace.
Tom Hartman here for All Energy Solar. One of the myths about solar is that you save more if you wait, but waiting to switch can actually cost you more. While tax rebates make solar affordable, those rebates are often limited and decrease over time. So when you wait, you risk losing some of the incentives that make solar so easy to afford today. And besides, the sooner you get your All Energy Solar system, the sooner you reduce or even eliminate that high electricity bill. Make the switch today at allenergysolar.com.
You know me as the carpet connoisseur of AM 950. At home, I have a whole zoo. 7 parakeets, 3 guinea pigs, and a chihuahua. Understand now why I'm such a big fan of Zero Res? They get rid of every splotch, every stain, every accident for my little critters. Before Zero Res, I used to move furniture to cover up my spots. Now my carpet is spectacular. Call Zero Res right now, 952-ZERO-RES, or go online at ZeroResMinnesota.com and say you want the AM 950 special. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They've built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
Burger Mo's gorgeous patio is open for the season. Enjoy nightly happy hours, more than 60 beers on tap, and the weather while you watch your favorite game on the outdoor screen. And don't miss live music Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Offering 20 fresh, never frozen burger varieties, Burger Mo's also offers delicious appetizers, soups, salads, as well as unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Burger Mo's is located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul with plenty of free parking and online at burgermo's.com.
Hi, this is Chad Larson, owner of AM 950. You are listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Brett and Eric are your Repartee hosts for your Thursday afternoon, our last live Minnesota Progressive repartee until Tuesday, as tomorrow we're going to be getting an early start on our Memorial Day holiday with a great best of show, so don't want to miss that. Interviews with Steve Swazinski and Scott Jensen from the Senate, and then also a conversation about the right to repair bill. Want to say hello to a couple of people watching on Facebook. Georgia from Nashville, Tennessee is watching, as well as Lisa, who made a comment saying she's a Joe Biden supporter and she is engaged. And I think, to be fair, going back to the point you were saying, Eric, how some Joe Biden supporters aren't engaged, I think you're right. But I think the point is that his support is so high right now, up in the 40s, that you're inevitably, when you get that high in the polls, going to have a number of supporters who might not be as politically engaged as some of the others. Because
I don't remember making that point. But
oh, okay. All right.
I'm saying that I don't understand how someone could be engaged in, like, Bernie, but also Joe Biden.
I see what you're saying.
Like,
yeah.
Diametrically
okay,
opposed.
Good. Yeah. I tried putting some words in your mouth right there, throwing you
I
under the bus.
You.
Yeah, yeah. Caught me. Holding me accountable.
Mm-hmm.
But just to the point I was making, yeah, you inevitably will have some voters who might not be quite as engaged when you're the front runner, because overall, you just have a whole ton of voters. Or if you look at some of the fringe candidates, you're only getting the diehards that absolutely want that person to win no matter what. So that's at least, well, the point I'm making, not Eric, that's my point. So there you go. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can comment on our Facebook feed at AM 950 Radio. So I want to move on to something that's been circling around Facebook, and it caught my attention when we had one of our Facebook trolls post this. I, of course, hit it because it's a completely false story. But I did some research on it initially because it surprised me. I don't know if you've heard about this, Eric, or have seen this floating around Facebook. So,
and I love these stories.
Yeah, yeah. So there's this story going around how apparently there was a group of young Somali teens, 8 to 10 of them, that all had hammers. And they were chasing around people at a light rail station by the University of Minnesota, and they were specifically choosing their targets who were white and looked like they had money. They were terrorizing them, and it completely snowballed from there when the right-wing media got hold of this. They, of course, completely embellished the story even more by saying several injuries were reported. People were scared for their lives. People were running. And, of course, you have the inevitable thing happening. And this is what happened with our Facebook troll as well. Why is the media in Minnesota not covering this story of Somali immigrants attacking white people at a light rail station at the University of Minnesota? And I initially thought that as well, because I was giving this person the benefit of the doubt. I thought, well, yeah, you know, if there are some people being attacked by a group at a light rail station, you would think that would make the news. But, of course, I thought better of it at that. Something doesn't quite seem right with this. So eventually, Snopes, the site that debunks different rumors and fake news, well, they weighed in on this, and it's only partially true what's being parroted by these right-wingers like Alpha News, Town Hall, and Red State. So what is true, according to Snopes, is that back on May 17th, University of Minnesota police officers cited 2 juveniles who were of Somali heritage for misdemeanors associated with brandishing pipes at a train station in the city. Now, what's false? Well, basically everything else with this story. It was not a group of 8 to 10 people who were brandishing hammers and attacking people. In fact, no injuries were reported whatsoever. To me, it just sounds like you had a group of Somali teens who were...
Not even a group, a pair, right?
A pair, yeah. Well, I think they said they sighted some other teens as well, or they at least chased them down but ended up not sighting them. So it sounded like there actually was a group, but they weren't chasing people. They weren't attacking people. It sounds like they were just there with a couple of pipes where maybe at worst they were showing signs of intimidating people. But yeah, completely false when you're seeing the hysteria on the right. And I've seen this pop up in comment sections on the Star Tribune where people saying, why aren't you talking about this story? Well, again, it's completely false. So if you see anyone sharing this story about Somali immigrants attacking white people at a light rail station in Minneapolis, just refer them to that Snopes story. They provide a nice detailed account of what actually happened and what's true and what's false.
That always seems to be the case. It's not, you know, a coordinated gang attack. It's just like kids fighting at the Mall of America.
Yeah, it's just kids being idiots, because when you're a teenager, you generally end up doing some idiotic things. I'm certainly part of that group as well. Doesn't matter if you're white, black, or whatever color. When you're a teenager, you inevitably do some dumb things, and it seems like that's the case for these kids. And they, of course, ended up getting cited with a, well, minor citation, it looks like, which happens to a lot of teenagers. So, yeah, if you see that story being passed along, make sure you you post that Snopes article and tell them it is completely fake. Hey, one other thing to bring up, and this is something I got to call out the Star Tribune on. They ran this headline a few days ago, and here's how it reads. Speaker asks if Democrats deserve the black vote in Minneapolis speech, and the subheadline is, in Minneapolis speech, Candace Owens urged an exit from the Democratic Party. And I got to call this out because why is the Star Tribune covering Candace Owens? If you're not familiar with Candace Owens, she is an African-American woman, I believe in her 20s, but she is far, far, far to the right. Eric, are you familiar with Candace Owens at all?
Yeah, she's somehow affiliated with the TP.
Yeah, Breitbart, whichever right-wing organization you can think of. But you got the Star Tribune citing her rally and basically passing this off as news when you got to actually look at the history of Candace Owens and some of the comments she's made in the past. Definitely not a mainstream person. Her most infamous thing is, of course, when she made comments about Adolf Hitler, and this was brought up on the House floor of Congress, where she basically said, well, I'll read the whole quote, I actually don't have any problems at all with the word nationalism. I think the definition gets poisoned by elitists that actually want globalism. Globalism is not what I want. Whenever we say nationalism, the first thing that people think about, at least in America, is Adolf Hitler. And you know, he was a national socialist. But if Hitler wanted to make Germany great and have things run well, okay, fine. So that's Candace Owens basically saying, well, I kind of liked Hitler's economic policies, but, you know, forget everything else he did. So that's Candace Owens for you, and that's the Star Tribune citing Candace Owens as a source in terms of whether Democrats deserve the black vote. I don't think you would be seeing the Star Tribune write an article about a far-left figure that would be in town, like a Louis Farrakhan or someone like that.
Yeah, and I want to say Louis Farrakhan is probably not a left-wing figure.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Everything
I guess he
advocates is pretty, like, conservative.
I'd say it's just flat crazy. Yeah, that's a good point.
But Wright definitely uses him as like a scapegoat.
Yeah, they just say because, yeah, well, Obama liked him. Yeah, that's a good point to bring up. Hey, we got time for one more caller before the actually, we don't have we don't have that caller on the phone line right now. But we're going to continue with our show with a few more pieces of miscellaneous information. I think you'll get a kick out of this one here, Eric, being that you and I are both kind of borderline millennials. A new poll done by Frank Luntz, who's a right-winger. Big right-winger, you know who he is. If you don't, look him up, but he was a big part of the Bush administration. So he conducted a new survey that finds Republicans under the age of 40 support a carbon tax by a 7-to-1 ratio. Unbelievable that you have young Republicans that are now on board with trying to do something about climate change. And again, this was something that was done by Frank Luntz, a far right-winger from the Bush administration. So even young Republicans are moving ahead on that issue. And one more piece of news to bring up to you. In Georgia, who just passed an extreme abortion ban, well, now they're starting to lose some of their film industry as a number of actresses, actors, and film producers have announced they'll no longer be filming in Georgia, which is a huge deal because
yeah,
I believe
every credits you see that Georgia piece.
Yeah, especially the Marvel Cinematic Universe, primarily set in Georgia. At least that's where they do their filming. So have to see if people in Georgia maybe rethink that abortion ban they just passed. That's it for the repartee. It's Brett and Eric signing off.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at am950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.